No, I think life expectancy for the UN, like for people, has gotten longer in the recent years. It's had a pretty rocky period, it must be said, where it's not been leading on the kinds of issues that it used to lead on. It's been fairly invisible during the great political crises, Syria, Ukraine, etc. And frankly, those are harder crises to insert itself effectively in than the crises and civil wars of Africa, where under Secretary General I worked for, Kofi Annan, the UN was very visible and in many cases pretty effective. So yes, coming off a not great period for the organization, but no, I think it's one of those things, if we didn't have it, we'd invent it. We'd quickly try and spawn a baby UN if we buried this one.
Do you think it gets a bad press?
Yeah, I do. And it's an uneven press. If you sort of follow on Twitter the 70th birthday thing of the UN, as I've been doing, and you see the Sydney Opera House gone blue for the night, or other pictures from around the world, you know that its global reputation is very uneven, that there are plenty of parts of the world where it's still hugely celebrated. But I do think in the UK, on the one hand, we follow it quite closely. There's still quite considerable coverage in the British media, but we're pretty sort of hard-bitten and cynical about it, I'm afraid to say.
And do you think that's because people associate the United Nations pretty much only with the United Nations Security Council, or is that unfair?
No, I think it's a very good point, Tim. I mean, that's exactly what does happen, and the Security Council has been living through a period of gridlock. In some ways, it's been as ineffective as it was during the Cold War period, not able to reach agreement on events like Syria, shooting down of a of the Malaysian Airlines plane over Ukraine, couldn't even agree on an investigation of that. It's as divided as it's ever been. Whereas the UN of Development and Humanitarian Action is extraordinarily active. This is the year that the Millennium Development Goals, that I was proud to have some hand in when they were adopted 15 years ago in 2000, are being retired and replaced by the much more complex and ambitious so-called Sustainable Development Goals. And the fact that there is a replacement is a measure of the success of the first goals, which were set targets for 2015. And people just don't realize that what they thought is complete UN over-the-top absurdity of halving the proportion of people living in absolute poverty by 2015 in the world has not only been met but exceeded. There are, as academics would I think confirm, at least those who are open-minded, there are millions of people alive today who wouldn't have been if it hadn't been for the adoption of those goals and the impact they had in getting governments and donors to realign their spending around basic things like health and education. So there is a less-noticed UN which remains hugely effective.
Well, I guess good news isn't always news.
Right.
I could give you a long list of achievements: eradication of smallpox, saving of the pyramids, etc., etc. But then you would only agree with me. Let me challenge you with a couple of the more negative aspects of the United Nations. For example, the giving to the Human Rights Council, one of its bodies, the Human Rights Council, Saudi Arabia chairs it. In the previous incarnation, Gaddafi's Libya chaired the United Nations Human Rights Council. Doesn't that make the organization a bit of a joke in some people's eyes?
Well, you see, the human rights thing is a very clear example of where you have to define, what the UN as a body with its own management and structures does, and what its member states choose to do at the political level in terms of the councils and governance they provide.
Yeah, but that makes a, doesn't it make a mockery of the idea of universal values when you've got a country such as Gaddafi's Libya that is somehow, I know why it is the regional politics of the UN, but it's allowed to chair the human rights. And at that point, people throw their hands up and lose a bit of faith in it.
I know, but, you know, in a sense, their frustration should be directed at those who voted for Saudi Arabia, which, as has been reported in the UK press, included Britain. And, you know, in a sense, the challenge that universal values are being undermined by the way the people who get selected is should be aimed at the selectors.
Would you have voted for Saudi Arabia to have to chair one of the bodies of the council, Human Rights Council?
No, I wouldn't have done. But what, you know, I would say is that there is a Jordanian who is the High Commissioner for Human Rights, who is an extraordinarily principled, able guy, who has been, you know, adding new energy and ambition to that portfolio in the UN. And, you know, he is the UN's version of human rights. That's what the organization itself produces. This is a person nominated by the UN Secretary General. So, in a sense, there are two UNs. There's the sort of the sort of standing UN, the kind of equivalent of the White Hall, if you like, the Secretariat. And there's the sort of Westminster UN, which is how do the member states act when they choose and vote for things. And, you know, I think this is, people have to understand this difference, that there is an executive UN, a secretariat, which does its best, you know, with the very difficult hand it's played by its Westminster political class, the member states of the General Assembly. And there's how people vote in the General Assembly. And there, you know, we should, in a sense, give much more attention and scrutiny to how our government votes, just as other people of other countries should do the same on the voting record of their government. And, you know, I mean, one of the occasional reforms suggested is that Britain's ambassador to the UN should in some way be accountable to Parliament. He should have to come and report regularly to the Select Committee on Foreign Affairs. Mm. You know, he should have to explain why he was instructed to vote in certain ways. And you could imagine in the current British Parliament, you know, this, you know, Jeremy Corbyn would no doubt be delighted to have a chance to cross-examine.
Well, that's one Select Committee hearing. Yeah, that's one Select Committee hearing I would personally watch.